Tereo Ererangi o Te Mania. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Next up, Himasha and Ranmali celebrate Sri Lankan culture and music.
I Bowan Canterbury. Me elemenho Ravi. Plains FM osse. Obehadavter sami pavanne Sri Lankitvei.
Deshe abhimane sampraday saha kala samagi.
Aibowan Canterbury.
Unnai ting benada wagema Aibowan Canterbury wedasarahanat ekka September maase wedasarahana aragena api okalanga hambenna ewilla innawa. Itin Ranmali api pahuge wedasarahana gena yamak matak karamu.
Aniwaryam hitana ape studio ekatat alut deyak una ape community ekatat alut deyak una. Anything up a
Sri Lanka Mahakomasaris to Mage, Palama Christchurch, Sancharedi, up a Aibowan Canterbury, Vedasrahanat Ekatuela, up a Canterbury Villa in Sri Lankan community ekata, Vadagatan Visser Bohomayak, up a Vedasrahan Tekatukaranata, up a Mahakomasaris, Prasanna Gamage, Matitabata Puluanguna.
Anyway, eating.
අද අපේ ස්ටෝඩියෝ එකේ තවත් විශේෂ අමුත්තෙක් එකතු වෙලා ඉන්නවා. ඉතින් ඒ අමුත්ත ගැන කියන්න කලින් රන්මලි මම කියන්න ඕනි ක්‍රයිස්ට්චර්ච් වර්ඩ් ෆෙස්ටිවල් එක ගැන. ක්‍රයිස්ට්චර්ච් වර්ඩ් ෆෙස්ටිවල් එක කියලා කියන්නේ වර්ල්ඩ් ක්ලාස් ෆෙස්ටිවල් එකක්. අපේ ක්‍රයිස්ට්චර්ච් වල ඉන්න ඕඩියන්ස් එකට book lovers ලට world class authors ලට සහ අපේ locally authors ලට direct access කරන්න පුළුවන් ඉවෙන්ට් එකක්. ඉතින් අගෝස්තු මාසෙ තිබුණු මේ ඉවෙන්ට් එකේදී අපිට පුළුවන් වුණා අපේ ශ්‍රී ලංකන් ඔරිජින් එකක් තියෙන අපේම රයිටර් කෙනෙක්ව අපේ මේ ස්ටුඩියෝ එකට ගෙනලා ඉන්ටර්විව් කරන්න.
ඔව් මම හිතන්නේ මොකද අපි කලිනුත් අපේ යංග ඔතර්ස්ලා ගෙනල්ලා මේ අපි ඉන්ටර්විව් කළා තියෙනවා. I think මම හිතන්නේ මේක අපිටත් ලොකු opportunity එකක් to get to know more authors, right? Our Sri Lankan authors. So, yeah.
So, let's welcome Branavan Nanalingam to Aibowan Canterbury. Aibowan, Wanakam Bran.
Wanakam, kia ora.
Abhi Bran kia la kata karo.
Yes.
Is that okay if you call
Bran,
you Bran?
Everyone calls me Bran.
Okay,
yes. So, as a brief introduction to Bran, Bran is a writer, novelist, reviewer, and a lawyer, and also a loving dad. So, do you want to go for the first
yes.
question?
So, yeah, we know that you were born in Sri Lanka and you were moved to New Zealand when you were very young. So just could you share how your Sri Lankan roots have shaped your identity and your writing to start with?
Yeah so I am a writer who writes about New Zealand, but also from a different angle, I think, to a lot of New Zealand writers and particularly Pākehā writers. And I think part of that alternative framework comes from being an immigrant, being a 1.5 generation child who moved here when I was three and had to navigate my own histories and own stories, and my parents were, you know, are part of the Sri Lankan Tamil community in Wellington, and so I had those connections, but then also navigating the dominant structures and schooling systems in Wellington as well.
Right.
So
yeah.
Sometimes you learn a little bit of, you become a little bit more attuned to the way people talk and the social codes and things like that, which then as a writer, that helps a lot because you're a little bit more aware of how to switch between different groups of people and different ways of talking and being.
Yeah. And Bran, even though you moved here at a very young age, like at the age of three, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So still, you belong to Sri Lankan parents.
Yes.
I know a lot of Asian parents put a lot of pressure on their kids to become successful in their studies. So I bet you had the same pressure from your parents
I was actually very lucky. My parents didn't put much pressure on me.
Uh-huh.
But I was also, I did well at school. And so it meant that they didn't have to
really
push me in order to do well.
Right.
They kind of trusted me to keep going and do what I wanted to do. I mean, I'm still a lawyer. I still yeah. did the professions and went through that that usual process. Yeah.
So you always managed to balance everything.
I always balanced it. Yeah. And so I I saw it definitely within our communities, and you can see it across Asian kids having to, you know, study really hard. But luckily, I never had that, and so that also gave me time to think about things creatively or do other hobbies, which I think actually has probably been really helpful because it's meant that I was able to progress writing at the same time as training to be a lawyer.
Nice. So, Bran, let's talk about a little bit about your primary and secondary education in New Zealand, and also how you initiate your writing career.
Mm-hmm. So I went through school in the Hutt Valley, which is even in the 80s was pretty multicultural, and so I never felt like I didn't belong when I was there, and I had good groups of friends all the way throughout, and I think that really helped, I guess, give me confidence to express my own voice, and that my voice did matter, which you know, plenty of kids don't get that luxury. So from there I went to university and I studied film. So film was my original passion, and I wanted to be a filmmaker.
So you still managed to convince your parents that you want to do film studies rather studying medicine or like engineering?
Yeah, I mean, medicine was never in the picture because I was never very good at science. Or science wasn't something I was particularly interested in. Engineering, less so because I was always good at English and history. They were my two favourite classes, and I think traditionally law hasn't been seen in the same way as medicine or engineering, but I think the way it's talked about in New Zealand, Australia, places like that, law has a high status, so that wasn't too hard to convince them, I guess. And so I was always doing a law degree while studying film, so I wasn't deviating too far from those expectations, and so I could do film while also studying law. That was enough.
Do you think you had some sort of a family influence from your parents or from your aunties or uncles for your passion in literature and arts and all these creative fields?
Not necessarily for my parents, but they always supported me, so I always loved to read. I had great teachers throughout school who I would write plays and they would let me put them on in primary school or in intermediate. I had a teacher who gave me a list of 110 books, young adult books I should read, and I read them all in
that year. That's a lot of reading.
Yeah. And so I always had great teachers who helped me from that perspective. But my parents, they always valued education. So regardless of what I wanted to do, if it was books, then that was, and regardless of circumstances, like books were always seen as important and valued. And so they would take me to the library or they would buy those cheap $3, $4 classics to read. So I was always surrounded by books, which helped a lot. But I didn't necessarily want to be a writer initially. It was only towards the end of my film degree, I started reviewing for the student magazine at Victoria University, Salient, and I was writing film reviews and I was also writing music reviews. And there was a website called the Lumia Reader, which I was heavily involved with as a reviewer, and so I would just write a lot. But I hadn't thought about fiction or being a novelist or anything like that. And what ended up happening was I did a very chaotic trip with two friends in North and West Africa.
I think we are going to ask about that in our next question.
I thought I'd write about that trip. But I thought I'd loosely fictionalize it so that my friends don't sue me for defamation. And I just got lucky. From there, I got lucky and got published. And that was how I became a writer.
I won't say you're lucky. You are talented. So
you worked your way.
But it was nice because I hadn't planned it. And then it's only afterwards that I realized actually that's the creative outlet that I love and really want to focus on. And so it was from that point onwards that I guess I became what I am now.
Yeah. So your passion for reading eventually made you become an author. So Now, like, talking about your books, I think mm-hmm. Ranmali has a question about your first novel.
I think you've already kind of started answering that question. So, and so your first debut novel was Getting Under Sail. So it was inspired, like you said, mm-hmm. from the trip that you took from with your friends in Africa and the dramatic experience that you had. So how did that journey really spark your literary voice?
Yeah, so as part of during high school, I didn't read as much. I watched a lot of films, and film became my mm-hmm. my passion, as I said before. Mm-hmm. But as part of preparing for the trip, I read a lot of African novels. Mm-hmm. And there was there's a series called the Heinemann Writers Series, which was Chinua Achebe basically started working with Heinemann to publish dozens of African writers to showcase their literature to a global audience. And it was part of the kind of decolonizing processes from the 1960s onwards. Mm-hmm. And so I read a lot of those in kind of preparation for the trip. And part of me, when I was reading those books, kind of started thinking, these guys could do it. Maybe I could do it too. Mm-hmm. So they were a huge inspiration in terms mm-hmm. of thinking that I could think about these sorts of trips or these sorts of frameworks. Mm-hmm. And then the trip ended up being so chaotic because my friends and I were so out of our depth. We hadn't done any planning. We hadn't properly researched.
Mm-hmm. How old were you?
We were 23 and 24.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, no planning. Yeah. You won't plan anything at that age.
No, and so we hadn't even checked MFATs, you know, high-risk zones, and we shouldn't be going and all that sort of stuff. So we just hitchhiked our way down and got into all sorts of stupid adventures, including we accidentally got arrested. And so things like that happened, which I thought... Mm. Also, one of the things that was really interesting when I was travelling through there was I was aware of class and privilege. Mm-hmm. And I was aware that there was some solidarity between locals and me for, I guess, colonial histories. Mm. Yeah. But I was also a tourist, and I was also had a privilege which... meant that I was always able to, I guess, escape, no matter what the kind of circumstances or situations that we were seeing. Mm. And it was that discomfort that I was feeling, which ultimately became what the book was about. It was this idea of tourism in this age of travel, in this age of politics and post-colonial identities and all that sort of thing, which ultimately Getting Under Sail was about.
That's amazing how you don't plan anything and you just change your life completely from just one. Mm.
I am someone who just says yes to a lot of things. I'm not very good at setting boundaries for myself, but sometimes that means that I just end up doing a lot of things which then ultimately I don't realise has this turning.
Amazing.
I mean, at that age, like at the age of like 20, 21, you might have felt like it's so much trouble, like you're bringing troubles to your life. But I think that kind of helped you like shaping up your life in the later years.
It really does. I think also there is something about young men and their lack of their prefrontal cortex and doing stupid things. That was certainly part of us as well.
And apart from using that kind of real experiences in your novels and your writings, you also talk about challenging themes like exploring racism and toxic masculinity. What motivated you to talk about such challenging topics?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I had no grand plan to become a writer. I didn't really know what or why I was writing. Mm-hmm. And so after Getting Under Sail, I started writing a novel, which went terribly. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to finish it. I didn't know how to structure it or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And it forced me to think a little bit about why am I a writer? What am I interested in? Mm-mm. And for me, a real big part of becoming a writer was I want to understand the world and I want to know more about how people interact. I think I'm quite a boring person in and of itself, but I'm fascinated by the way people and society interplay. So I'm a bit of a, I guess, old-fashioned 19th century novelist. That kind of approach of how does an individual fit in society rather than the kind of modernist idea of a novelist, which is about looking inwards. And so that, to me, naturally leads to being thinking about the world politically and thinking about some of these big issues which then feed into the novels. And so I do write about complex issues, because that's, I guess, a novel is great because it allows you to explore. Yeah.
So are they purely based on your observations, or you add a bit of imagination?
Definitely.
As a writer.
Yeah, I think my first book was very much autobiographical. It was my trip. Mm-hmm. But I'm less interested in exploring myself. Mm-hmm. I'm much more interested in exploring other people. So that's where the imaginative idea kind of takes over, and imagining these situations and thinking about other people. And sure, some of yourself feeds into it, but I'm much more interested in other people.
Yeah.
And I think that then also leads to these stories, which are not about me, but about other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when it comes to your writing style and your cultural identity, I think you use Sri Lankan names in your stories.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
So can you talk a little bit about why that felt important for you to include?
Yeah, okay. So I think, so my first, apart from that first book, which I think is a bit of an outlier because, again, no plan, my second, third and fourth novels had Pākehā protagonists, but they were about class and race and colonial impacts. But I hadn't felt necessarily ready to write a Sri Lankan identity or a Tamil identity straight away, because I didn't necessarily felt I had the confidence or the voice to do so. And so my fifth novel, Sodden Downstream, which was about a Tamil refugee post-Civil War, post-2009, that was such an enormous topic to try and cover, but I wanted to focus on a day in the hut. That was, writing about that gave me a lot more confidence that I could write about our various identities and the complexities of our histories and our narratives. And also it was the most successful book that I'd written. It was shortlisted for the New Zealand Book Awards and it kind of also gave me the confidence that actually I can write about this stuff. There is an audience in New Zealand for this.
And I know a few of your books have been shortlisted also. Shall we talk a little bit about that?
That and my second book, my book afterwards, Springs, we're both shortlisted.
Yeah. And also, like, you have written like few novels at a very short period of time while you're practicing as a lawyer and also as a young dad. So how do you balance that?
I mean, it is a challenge. And but I think it's also that maybe that immigrant hustle idea of just getting on and doing it. Because if you
think you get that strength from your parents?
Yeah, I think so. But I think most immigrants, when they move here, tend to be, I need to do my best to make it in some way, shape or form. So I think that has meant that I've kept writing. I also have... and I've written about this before, my family has a terrible history of heart disease and I've lost uncles and my grandfather very young. And so the sense that I could die very quickly and not that far away, and most of them were in their 40s or 50s, has also kind of spurred me on to make sure I get my stuff written before it's too late. I'm not sure what drives it, but part of it also is one.
I would say you work smart and also like work hard, and you are definitely capable of multitasking.
Yeah, well, one of the things with so I'm a property and construction lawyer, and that's they're transactional lawyers, so they don't tend to work on one file and just work on one file alone, like a litigation lawyer or another type of lawyer. They tend to work on 15, 20 different files all at the same time, and you're constantly jumping between frameworks and thinking. And so what I do when I write is I treat my novel as a file. And so for me, it's just jumping between those files. And sometimes there's also a thing where you say, if you want legal advice, ask a busy lawyer, because the busy lawyer is going to be more efficient, is going to get it done without spending too long or procrastinating or all that sort of stuff. And I find having less time is actually quite helpful for me as a writer, because it forces me to go, well, I've only got half an hour, I need to make sure I use it. Whereas if I'm the type of person, if I had too much time, I'd jump on the internet or not, procrastinate or do something else. And so actually having quite a busy life has been helpful to writing.
Yeah.
And talking about the you working as a lawyer, like, how do you, I understand that your daily practices, so being busy as a lawyer, that actually kind of translates into your storytelling as well. And also, how do your legal experience kind of inform your storytelling?
Yeah, so my legal work doesn't necessarily, from a subject matter perspective, doesn't feed into my writing. I have professional obligations which stop me, but even if I had wanted to. But there are, you practice as a writer, as a lawyer, because you're always writing. You're always having to think about what is the best way to express my client's position in this particular circumstance. And sometimes you have to be aggressive and say, this is what I need, or this is what my client needs. Sometimes you have to be a little bit more conciliatory because you've got no legal standing. Other times you're trying to negotiate, so you're always thinking about other people and thinking about how to express stuff. So that's really good for me. That's really good training.
Do you think it's tough to like switch from creative writing to legal writing? And
I don't think they're necessarily mutually exclusive. I mean, I think...
So you found that pattern.
Yeah, I think there's something always helpful to be creative as a lawyer. And I work in areas that require a little bit of creativity because you're negotiating, you're trying to come to deals. I also work in the treaty space quite frequently, and the treaty is such a novel, from a legal perspective, such a novel area of law. And so you're constantly, again, having to be creative. So all of that stuff does feed into helping as a writer, and then also vice versa, because you, as a writer, you learn how to express ideas, how to bring people along, all that sort of stuff. So I think those two do help.
Nice. So earlier you mentioned that you didn't had much of a confidence bringing your Sri Lankan identity and your Sri Lankan roots to your writing in New Zealand. So later years, how did you gain that confidence?
Yeah, so I mean, certainly having the success of Sodden Downstream helped a lot. But also part of the reason why I write is to understand the world, and part of it also is understanding me and my place in the world. And so the more I've learnt about my Tamil heritage, the more then that has led to wanting to learn about the broader context of my family's history, the broader context of Sri Lanka's history, the broader context of South Asia's history, Asia's history, New Zealand history. And so it's kind of one of those strange things where the closer you get to the shore, the bigger the shore seems, and there's more to explore. And so,
when was your last visit to Sri Lanka?
I haven't been since I was a child, but I am going at the end of the year for the first time since.
You must be very excited to
I'm
see
excited,
Sri
but
Lanka.
A little nervous as well. It's kind of one of those things where
it's changed quite rapidly. So
I can imagine.
And do you remember anything about Sri Lanka? Do you have any memories?
A little bit from the trips. So I last went when I was 13. Which was the mid-90s. But yes, we're going to go up to Jaffna. We're going to go, we're going to see parts that I've never been to, but also be a tourist. Like I haven't, every time I went to Sri Lanka, it was always relatives in Colombo. I haven't, and maybe one day trip to Kandy. So I otherwise haven't been a tourist there either. So it'll be nice to...
Yeah. I'm sure it'll spark a lot of creative ideas when you're done there.
Hopefully we can see another new novel on your Sri Lankan trip.
I mean, it's certainly, I think also I have a very strong plan of taking as many notes as I can while I'm there because I'm never going to have that same first experience.
That's true,
Again, so it's certainly something that I'm planning for and thinking about a lot from as a writer as well as being... being from there as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you'll gain heaps of inspirations. All the golden beaches, spicy food, and people with big smiles on their faces.
I can't wait. That's it's going to be a great trip. But I also, going back to that earlier question, part of it is the more I explore, the more then you also lean into those various identities. And so yeah, my writing is also kind of developed a lot because I am, you know, exploring some of that stuff.
So over the years, you have contributed to Lumiere criticizing like international films. So how those critiques help to shape your work?
I think it's a very useful thing for creative people to think about other people's texts and artwork. For me, being a reviewer meant that I was always thinking critically about films and about books and about music. But I was also interested in affect and how people respond to those works. And I think as a writer myself, a lot of what I thought about other people's works had then fed into what I've done.
Mm-mm.
It's also been really helpful because I also think about text quite intensely before I write. So I have a clear sense of what I'm doing. I have a clear framework of what I'm referring to or who I'm referring to.
Mm.
And for me, that's helped me a lot as a writer. It means that if I'm working on a project, I think about, well, this someone's done it this way, and how do they do it this way? And I can break it apart, and that helps me then put it back together in my own project.
Ranmali, do you want to ask the last question?
Yeah. So, this sounds like an amazing journey, but also as challenging parts of it as well. So, what advice do you have for young writers or emerging writers, especially coming from a bicultural background and even multiple identities as careers as well? So,
yeah, I mean, I think as my story of doing multiple jobs is not unique. Most writers in this country are having to balance a few things, so that itself should not discourage people from writing in the first place.
Yeah.
For people of our immigrant backgrounds, of different identities, leaning into that is a really awesome way to be a writer, also to learn about yourself, to learn about your various cultural frameworks, your histories, your family stories, and not to feel worried or ashamed or think that no one will want to read it, because that's absolutely not true. But I also think you don't need to write for someone else as well. One of the things that I have learnt, and one of the things I've always been very conscious of actually, is I write for myself. My presumed reader or my ideal reader is myself. It's not a Pākehā reader, or it's not this person or this person. It's that's myself. So I don't need to compromise my writing. I don't need to add a glossary. I don't need to, do that stuff, which is inherently part of me. And I have to, thank the people like Patricia Grace and Witte Umaira who laid that groundwork in New Zealand literature, who were like, this is our identity. We don't have to explain that to you.
Yeah.
And I would absolutely lean into that as immigrant writers as well.
Yeah.
And then I guess the final thing is just making sure you don't pull the ladder up behind you and making sure that if you get some success, that you do what you can to help the next generation. Because I also feel like that's a very Asian thing as well, being the auntie, being the uncle to to help people come up is a pretty critical thing across all Asian cultures, and that's something that we can absolutely do as the people who are kind of leading the way.
I'm pretty sure you're going to be an inspiration for our younger community in Canterbury who's going to listen to this program, because we had the opportunity to interview another young author.
The 12-year-old.
Few years ago. I think you're going to be an inspiration for them. And I know we do have award-winning authors with Sri Lankan origin across the world. But the specialty in you is you bring your Sri Lankan roots to your writing. And that is what I like about you. So I think that's the specialty. So, and we do have literature festivals in Sri Lanka, for example, Gold Literature Festival, which I think the best literature festival in Asia. So, do you have any plans to go back to Sri Lanka and contribute to some of those events in future?
I would love to go to Gold, and having heard about that festival, that would be great. But you're right. There's also, particularly the last few years, there have been a number of Sri Lankan writers who have done really well overseas and won some pretty major prizes. Shehan Karunathilaka, Anuk Araparagasam, Vivi Ganeshanandan, and also Chai Time at Cinema Gardens. Briefly forgotten the name. Who won the Miles Franklin in Australia. So Sri Lankan writers, and talking about our stories and our histories, have done pretty well in the last 5 years. So, oh, Shankari Chandran. So, yeah, there's certainly people are interested in our stories, and I think despite all the histories as well, we are natural storytellers.
That's a great way to explore Sri Lankan true identity and all the history and art to the rest of the world.
Yeah, I remember, was it Michael Ondaatje talking about, you know, there's nothing like being surrounded by a group of Sri Lankans because they just talk and they have these stories and they're really good storytellers, and that inspired him to become, you know, the world famous writer that he is. And I think that's also meant that so many of us who come from there also similarly have kept with writing and also kind of sharing our stories. And there's always things like humour. There's things like there's like chaotic energy to what we do in some of these books that have done really well, which I know hopefully means that more of us keep doing it.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Bran. And thank you so much for accepting our invitation and joining with us today in our Plains FM studio with Aibo and Canterbury. I know you have a very busy schedule for the next 3 days, like including today. You have 4 talks, morning and afternoon sessions.
Mostly afternoon, thankfully.
So thank you again for joining with us. And we had Bradaman Jnanalingam. He's an award-winning writer, novelist, and a lawyer, and a Sri Lankan. So thanks again, Bran.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. I think it's time to wrap up the program today.
Yes. I think api ilanga mase thamuna balaporete adar samaganna.
Metak hela oba samaga randi siti mama Himasha Gunasekara.
Mama Ranmali Godagamage.
Thank you. ungalukku